Shalom, Saints. Welcome back to another episode of After Hours. Thank you for joining me once more. Plenty to get into this week. Action-packed as ever. As you guessed by the title of today's show, we're going to be looking at a very sensitive and difficult issue of church hurts and the pitfalls of what takes place in, big church-based organizations, etc. But before we get into the meat of today's show, something came my way this week where I wanted to include it in the podcast, but I didn't feel like I could do the full topic justice because there's a lot to it. But we'll take a little look into this before we get into the main part of the show. Now, I don't know if any of you guys are familiar or have come across individuals within, let's say, the spiritual community who adhere to the teachings and writings of ancient texts of the Anunnaki and the Epics of Gilgamesh and Sumerian tablets and all of these kind of Babylonian-centered ancient writings that can attract a certain type of, I guess, truth seeker, if you will. And something has been taking place over the last couple of weeks, which I think has been absolutely fascinating. Now, one of the biggest proponents on a public area for this is an individual by the name of Billy Carson. Now, if you're not familiar with this guy, he's over the last several months been doing all of the big shows and platforms and podcasts, you know, the Joe Rogans, the Andrew Schultz, like a lot of big, you know, not small platforms. And not only has he been talking about his beliefs in the kind of old texts and how it links to his beliefs and philosophies, which is, you know, to a man, that's fair enough. But intertwined in this is a narrative that he's been speaking really badly about the Bible, about Yeshua, about Jesus. And I think this actually contains a story of, I guess just good old-fashioned justice, where if you're going to go out on a platform and talk smack about the Lord, like outright lies, bad things can come your way. So it's not for me to cast aspersions on individuals that have a certain belief or whatever. That's besides the point. But when you start really promoting lies about the origins of Christianity and the Bible in particular, gosh, bad things can happen. So if you aren't familiar, we'll just give you a little brief introduction here.
Meaning of certain
things. I'll
give
you one big translation that's off is they say, well, Jesus was crucified.
Whoa.
Well, that doesn't exist in the Sinai Bible.
What happened?
It doesn't exist in the book of Barnabas. He didn't.
That's
didn't,
a fire name, Barnabas.
I know, but they left that out of the Bible on purpose, by accident.
So how did they kill him?
They didn't kill him. In Harvard Library, there is a book of Jesus' wife at the Harvard Seminary School. And they found that about 8 years ago.
Jesus' wife is the Mary Magdalene?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she was not actually...
They're assuming it's Mary Magdalene. It doesn't specifically say, but we're assumed that it is, which means he probably had kids and his Merovingian bloodline is still probably walking the land till this very day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's in, what was that great book, the Dan Brown book, The Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code, yeah.
Yes.
So
there's probably someone related to Jesus right now.
Right.
Meaning of certain things.
I'll give you one big...
Right, so this is just a tiny example, like the essence of this guy. He goes on, he talks with like really, really like sincere authority on these subjects. And if you don't know any better, you could end up thinking that what he's saying is truth. And this, like I said, this is just a small tidbit of the things that he's been saying with regards to biblical inerrancy. And, you know, and look, we're always going to find ourselves in positions where having to explain stuff or, you know, get into things that people contest about the faith. That's fine. But this guy is like, he literally makes a lot of money and he promotes a lot of dangerous, deceptive ideas on really big platforms. And he's been doing it for quite a long time. And, you know, he came across my radar within the last year and I was thinking, gosh, like, is somebody going to press him on these like claims? Because like, there's really big holes in the things that he's saying. And praise Yah, like it happened.
Yes, the debate freaking took place with Billy Carson and Wesley Huff.
Yeah. Can't go on. Right, well, we can do a follow-up.
I really appreciate it, Billy. Thanks so much for interacting.
2 weeks ago, my good man Billy Carson sat right here next to me in person, and we pulled online from Canada Wesley Huff, and we had a healthy conversation and debate about some of our different beliefs.
You actually believe that the majority of Christians really believe that God is not masculine, that God is has both aspects?
It's irrelevant what the majority of Christians believe. What historical biblical Christianity articulates is what they should believe.
I had a follow-up from him immediately after the show, basically asking me not to air the show. I said, who's some... Yes, the debate.
So, yeah, basically he goes on to a podcast of a friend of his who's also a believer, and under the premise of having a shared conversation, not even necessarily a debate, but wanting to go into deeper about the claims he's made about Christianity in general. And it unravels in a way which is just amazing. The guy who he has the conversation with is a gentleman called Wes Huff, a Canadian guy who's literally like a scholar in the sense that he studies the original like papyrus and all of the original texts like at a serious level. And so he starts holding him accountable to the claims that he makes, and it just unravels. So I genuinely recommend, like, if you've got a spare couple of hours, go and have a look, take a watch. And if you've ever come across people who have tried to rebuttal against things like the Torah and the Bible and our beliefs because of the so-called ancient texts that the Bible's copied off, etc., like, get into it, because there's so much in there which will help you understand and to potentially fend off some pretty funny ideologies. But there's an amazing subplot to it as well. It's still ongoing. It's not finished yet. So if you've got a spare bit of time, I just recommend you get into it. I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but the debate, you'll find the full debate on YouTube. You'll also find some good commentaries going through it as well. So yeah, just check it out, because it's great. It really is fun. With that being said, let's get into, as I mentioned, the meat of today's show. Now, it seems to be over the last couple of weeks on the show that we've been speaking about some pretty heavy topics, I guess, and this week's not really an exception in the sense that, you know, things come my way and I feel like it's important to talk about it. And this isn't necessarily a new subject again. This is something that's gone on for a long time. But, yeah, I wanted to talk about this notion of church hurt and people who have been in the institution of church, whether it be the Sunday system or any other denomination, who have bad experiences, and it strongly affects their faith going forward. And what does that mean to us as messianics, etc.? I think it's good to take a look at what's taking place in the wider body. So let's take a look. So the first article, I think you'd be hard-pressed not to have come across this story about the resignation of the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, sorry for the hurt caused by his final speech in the Lord's. So we'll just go through the article for those who may not be familiar. The Archbishop of Canterbury has apologised wholeheartedly for the hurt his final speech in the House of Lords caused. In his comments in the chamber on Thursday, Justin Welby drew laughter from some peers when he mentioned a 14th century beheading, but his words and the tone of his speech were criticised by a bishop as well as abuse survivors. On Friday, in a statement released through Lambeth Palace, he said, "Yesterday I gave my farewell speech in the House of Lords as part of a debate on housing and homelessness. I would like to apologise wholeheartedly for the hurt that my speech has caused. I understand that my words and the things that I said and those omitted to say have caused further distress for those who were traumatised and continue to be harmed by John Smith's heinous abuse and the far-reaching effects of other perpetrators of abuse." Now, John Smith, or Smythe, he was an individual, he was a barrister, I believe, who had very strong affiliations to the Church of England and over a very significant period of time was responsible for the abuse of many, many people, was never held accountable from a criminal point of view. His actions were aware, made aware within the church institution and nothing was done. So hence the resignation of the Archbishop in relation to this. I did not intend to overlook the experience of survivors or to make light of the situation. I'm very sorry for having done so. The Archbishop resigned after the independent Macon review found John Smythe, the most prolific serial abuser to be associated with the church, might have been brought to justice had Mr. Welby formally reported him to police in 2013. At the time of his resignation, Mr. Welby, whose last day in the job will be the 6th of January, said he was quitting in sorrow with all victims and survivors of abuse. Now, on Friday, in an apparently specific reference to Smythe's abuse, Mr. Welby said he takes both personal and institutional responsibility for the long and re-traumatising period after 2013 and the harm that this has caused survivors. I continue to feel a profound sense of shame at the Church of England's historic safeguarding failures. In his speech, Mr. Welby said that a fallout of the review required a head to roll. A male victim of Smythe's abuse who wished to remain anonymous said he was appalled, accusing Mr. Welby of being tone deaf. He has resigned in shame, burdened by the Macon review with moral and personal responsibility, and all he can do is joke about rolling heads. The Bishop of Newcastle, the only bishop to call publicly for Welby's resignation last month, said people had messaged her expressing dismay at the Archbishop's speech, and she herself was deeply disturbed by parts of it. So basically, the Archbishop's gone into the House of Lords, he's done a speech, he said something that's deeply insensitive, showing a lack of regard for those that have fallen foul of this individual, and he's trying to play it down, basically. Now, as I said, this is nothing new, and I know as believers, when we mentioned that we're in the faith, that we believe in God, and I'm generalising slightly, that a lot of people can accuse us being part of an institution and a faith that harbours abuse, particularly really heinous abuse. And I've started at this point of reference because I know that this is something that's been endemic within various denominations. And my goal today isn't necessarily to go through all of these instances, because I think we're all well aware at this point of what's taken place historically, going all the way back up until modern day. But I think the difficulty is when we're tarred with the same brush, when we're guilty by association in terms of our faith and who we represent and the things that are taking part under the name of Jesus, I think there's always going to be an avenue of interest for us as believers to be able to understand the things that are taking place and the moves that have been made in this. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist for somebody to say, we don't want nothing to do with that. That's, you know, this is a tainted area. And again, much like a lot of institutions in the modern day, this isn't a subject that is exclusive to the church. This is part of a lot of things in wider society, whether it be sports, whether it be politics, you name it, where there's a group of people, there's going to be things that take place that are damaging on the whole. But as it says in the scriptures, judgment starts in the house of the Lord. So I think it's good that we take a look at our own backyard and shine some light on it. Now, also this week, I had I saw an article on an individual called Mike Pilavachi. Now, for those who aren't familiar with this individual, we're going to highlight this person. And again, it's not really my desire to highlight this individual for the sake of naming and shaming, even though that's part of the fallout of when these things take place. But I just wanted to go into this premise of organized church in the UK in particular, and the sentiment of individuals who take advantage of positions of power, authority, leadership, and how this accountability is vital moving forward. So I'll just let this play out and give us a bit of context.
One of the most influential and highly praised leaders in British evangelicalism, mainstreaming charismatic practice and inspiring young Christians to train for ordination through the Soul Survivor festivals. However, in April 2023, his reputation began to collapse when allegations of inappropriate behaviour were investigated and substantiated by a Church of England investigation. In this video, we will unpack the influence of the ministry of Pilavachi, detail the allegations made against him, and analyse how this has impacted the UK church. Pilavachi's ministry began as the youth pastor at St Andrew's Chorleywood in Hertfordshire, from which he and a small team in 1993 planted Soul Survivor in nearby Watford. That same year, Pilavachi also launched a youth-focused festival under the same name, which would grow substantially into a movement of tens of thousands of young people who were often drawn to him and his charismatic theology through his humorous, self-deprecating preaching.
And then I went home and I thought, oh no, it's not long now. This is going to be the humiliation of my life. And I thought, what do I do? And then I thought, you know what? If I can't get the gift of prophecy, I'll try the gift of guessing. And then I thought, you know what? That's really not going to work unless you have a word like, the Lord says, you're a man. And even that you can get wrong these days, can't you? And so I thought, oh no, what am I going to do?
Mike Pilavachi and Soul Survivor are recognized.
So I just want to touch on the point here. One of the issues that I have, and having spoken to some Christians in the Sunday system, and I don't profess to be an expert. I don't go to these churches, but I think one of the key fundamental principles is that we find a lot in modern day church, great orators, charismatic people. And I don't mean charismatic in the gifts and all that stuff. I mean like strong personalities, great speakers, who are able to lead and have great personal traits, but I feel that without sound doctrine and theology and somebody who can teach the word of God, without that we can create a space in which individuals who do have a kind of draw and a strength, particularly in areas of authority and leadership, which can then bleed into taking advantage of and manipulating those who are vulnerable. Now, we understand the nature of church is to disciple and to help conform people, those to the image of Christ in character and deed and action and knowledge and all of these attributes. But the reality is we are a body of vulnerable people, may have suffered great traumas, gone through very difficult lives, You know, Jesus said, Yeshua said, I come for not the righteous, but the sick. You know, and there are many sick people who are ill, suffering, who come to church as a place of, first and foremost, refuge and healing and safety, because there are those that have been hurt in many different ways. And again, we're all adults. We know what takes place in the world. But my point being, there is a space in which people who hold a certain caliber of personality, strength in how they hold themselves, that if you can make people laugh, if you can make them feel good, if you can, win them over by your personal attributes, I think we can fall into danger of the fundamentals of what a leader needs to be doing, and that's feeding the flock with the word so that their relationship with the Most High can be a connection between them and the Father directly, not having a man who intercedes in that. Now, obviously, that isn't to negate the role of a shepherd and to have compassion, to have warmth, to have personality. I'm not saying that, but if it's not underpinned by good theology, then I think it's for the waste. It's going to go to the waste, and part of that waste, I think, is what we're seeing in the church. So I just wanted to highlight that. And again, this isn't necessarily just in view of this individual. I believe that this is indicative of many modern preachers, of many modern churches who have very prominent, strong leaders, but they're not teaching the word. And we can get into the differences of doctrine and say, well, they don't believe in this and we believe in that, like that's cool, whatever. But I think my heart is that there are people within these systems who are seeking God, who love Yeshua, and they're deceived, and there are vulnerable people getting hurt, and we need to be aware of this.
Nice to have had a huge impact on the church in the UK. Writing for Religion Media Centre in 2019, journalist Tim Wyatt stated that the movement has been instrumental in mainstreaming Pentecostal charismatic Christianity in Britain, highlighting that commentators say the festivals played a significant role in catalyzing and inspiring many young Christians to pursue ordination and church leadership. Pilavachi would subsequently be awarded the MBE in 2020 for services to young people and received praise from numerous Christian leaders, both nationally and internationally.
I'm just going to touch on very briefly about this notion of what a lot of things are promoted in this is leadership. You know, we're going to make you into leaders and you're going to plant churches, and not everybody's called to that. You've got the festivals are amazing and the services are great. It's like a lot of kind of superficial stuff, which I think, again, doesn't tend to stand the test of time and can leave a lot of individuals with questions, more questions than answers. And I've personally interacted with individuals who have been shunned or put by the side within Christian denominations because they're not the worship leader, they're not part of the worship team, or they're not on the fast track to planting, and I think that's such a shame.
I've said already one or two things about Mike, but Mike and Andy, this what you're doing in this church and in this movement is extraordinary. And the Church of England and the church in the wider than the Church of England, the church in England, owes so much to you and Andy in this church.
Mike has been our friend for many, many years. To me, he's one of the most Jesus-like characters on the planet. He's an Anglican priest. You wouldn't believe that when he comes up, if only he was the role model for all Anglican priests in the world, it would be a wild place. But he is just a lovely man, very kind, very generous.
However, Pilavachi's reputation began to collapse when it was announced at Soul Survivor Watford in April 2023 that the Church of England's National Safeguarding Team had opened an investigation into allegations made against him. The statement made to the congregation did not divulge the allegations' nature. However, details became public when accusers who had formerly taken the Soul 61 Gap Year programme anonymously revealed their experiences to the Daily Telegraph. They accused Pilavachi of encouraging them to receive full-body massages in their underwear in his bedroom and to partake in vigorous wrestling matches that could last as long as 20 minutes at a time, sometimes in church. They also accused him of psychological torment, with the tension and promise of a prestigious life in ministry only to be dropped. One accuser, highlighting the extent of this behaviour, described himself as part of a conveyor belt of young, athletic, attractive men, usually around 18 to 21, from broken homes or with traumatic childhoods. As the investigation progressed, Pilavachi was suspended that May before resigning in July, stating on social media that he sought forgiveness from anyone he had hurt during the course of his ministry. The investigation came to a conclusion in September 2023, confirming that the allegations received by the National Safeguarding Team had been substantiated. This led Soul Survivor Watford to issue a public apology and announce the launch of an independent review into their culture and practices in relation to the handling of these allegations.
We are grateful to all those who have contributed to this process and who, by coming forward, have brought Mike's abusive behaviour into the light. We are deeply sorry to all those people who have been victims of spiritual, emotional, and psychological abuse, physical wrestling, and massage under Mike's leadership. The investigation found that there has been a systematic pattern of coercive and controlling behaviour.
As Pilavachi had a significant influence on charismatic evangelicalism and Christianity in general in the UK, the impact of the allegations and investigation has likewise been significant. Many Christians who had attended Soul Survivor festivals felt forced to reflect on their own experiences with the movement, most notably many youth pastors. In the run-up to that year's National Youth Ministry Weekend, one of its organisers, Martin Saunders, revealed in an interview with Premier Christian News that there would be a need to do an awful lot of pastoring of youth leaders because they are the people who've either grown up at Soul Survivor and events like that themselves, or they've been taking, like I have, groups of young people to Soul Survivor for 20 years or so. Saunders also revealed that the conference would be providing a special session to give people an opportunity to process some of their emotions, some of the sense of grief and trauma that we feel about that. The investigation into Pilavachi has also further undermined confidence in the Church of England's ability to safeguard effectively, adding to a string of scandals relating to prominent church leaders. In particular, it has indicated that some bishops feel limited in how they can address allegations in their dioceses. When calls were made in June 2023 for an independent investigation into Soul Survivor, the bishop of its diocese, Alan Smith, stated he was unable to instigate one due to the possibility of disciplinary action being taken against him. Thank you for watching this video. If you found it helpful, please consider...
Right, so that's the outline. We have this individual, again, historical abuse. You're probably tired of hearing these stories. I'm tired of hearing these stories. And I know a lot of you guys are probably going to be thinking, well, what's it got to do with us? We're in the messianic branch of the faith. Like, I know some people would even go as far to say it's a different Jesus, and I don't share the same faith as these individuals. And I understand if that's your stance, then so be it. But at the same time, that doesn't mean to say that there can't be things to be learned within these situations, because a lot of people talk about the growth and development of the messianic faith, you know, the integration of the gospel and the good news and the life, death and resurrection of Yeshua, but also integrated into the word of God, into the Torah and the prophets and the fulfillment of all that. If you're here, chances are you know about that already. So if we are looking at growth, if we are looking at expansion in any way, these are all things that are integral, I believe, in terms of maintaining a solid foundation to not fall into these same pitfalls. I don't feel like, again, this is just my opinion. We may not be impervious to these things happening. We are human after all. We are fallen. We are all subject to the same temptations and all the things that come with being in positions of authority and power. And I know that these situations aren't exclusive to the Christian area. I know that these things have taken place in the messianic communities. So that doesn't mean to say just because you do teach Torah, it means you're not exempt from like these things happening. That's not what I'm saying at all. That really isn't the case. But if you don't feel that this is relevant to you because this is happening over there, what I would suggest is what can we learn and what can we take away from this? Now, a lot of you might be thinking, well, this is just some church in Watford. You know, I don't think it's many great sheikhs. But I think this is a bigger deal than what we might give credit to. So one of Pivlacci's victims, sorry, should I say, is the very well-known worship artist Matt Redman, the writer and singer of 10,000 Reasons, very, very successful, very well known, was actually a youth leader under Pivlacci at this time in Watford. I was thinking, wow, like I didn't realize the scope of, you know, what this ministry has sort of reached. And again, I just want to highlight the sentiment of this isn't about naming and shaming. For me, it's like we could well be on the verge of like having a huge, huge vacuum of believers who have fallen foul of, you know, the spectrum of abuses that take place in these big organizations who, yeah, may come out of the church, who come away from the faith even, or are looking for places that have integrity and really do teach and follow the word of God. And again, it's part of this premise for me. I know lots of people who have a heart for individuals who are in this system who would like for them to see and come to the branch of faith that we're in, but in a way that's real and in a way that's spirit-led. And for me, it's like, wow, there could potentially be a whole catchment of people who are suffering from church hurt and may not even know that there's an alternative. So anyway, this is a small documentary. I'm just going to play a few clips from it. Again, I think it's well worth watching. It's only half an hour long, and it goes into the different areas of what took place within that church. But we'll just highlight a few bits.
Soul Survivor was a youth movement. Worship music was really very much at the heart of it, and I was so privileged to be the worship leader and be part of that from the beginning and help plant a church as well, Soul Survivor Watford. Those years were very, very special. It just felt like God was breathing on something, and it was amazing seeing tens of thousands of young people come together, and usually over 1,000 people at the summer festivals becoming Christians. No doubt to me, this was something God was doing, and it was absolute thrill and a joy to be part of it.
There's been so much providence and so many precious people connected to Soul Survivor that we've got to do life with and be friends with. So much good has come from it, but there has been so much pain and so much damage.
So unfortunately, the situation at Soul Survivor is not as unique as we would hope. Misuses of power are endemic in the world, but they are also endemic in the church. And I think the church has got a huge amount to learn.
I'm really keen to be part of this because I think it's such an important moment in terms of the church speaking in something that really matters. I was up close to a lot of what happened way back at Soul Survivor with Mike Pilavarci. This is a subject where I feel like I do have a voice. I met Mike Colavacci when I was 13 years old. He was my youth leader. Had a really good rapport with him. Honestly, had a good rapport with everyone. He was a youth leader with a lot of humor and warmth. We went on a weekend away as a youth group, and I was carrying a deep secret. I was actually being... And during that weekend, I decided I would tell Mike, and he helped me go to the authorities and walk that through. But it's an interesting thing for me because I think because of that, I had an undying loyalty to him. I was probably seeing him every day, I would think. And then he started to counsel me about my... Which, looking back, I don't feel awesome about because he wasn't a trained counsellor. He'd actually been an accountant just a few years before. And, you know, I was telling him the deepest, darkest things, and he was asking me for the details of what happened. The real problematic thing to me about that is he would often wrestle me afterwards. Wrestling was definitely his thing. I know a lot of people who were physically wrestled by Mike, and honestly, it was quite often in a hidden room in the church, or it would be around his house, away from everyone. And looking back, I don't feel great about that. I didn't feel good at the time. I didn't really like physical touch that much because of what happened to me. I thought maybe this is a youth leader trying to break the tension, or it's what youth leaders do. Sometimes it could go on for 20 minutes. It was like full-on wrestling, but obviously this is a youth leader. This is an adult. This is hidden away from everyone. Looking back, I really don't feel good about it, and especially as sometimes it happened straight after we'd been talking about the details of the sexual abuse that I'd suffered.
Tell me, what was it like when you first arrived?
So there we have a almost classic setup there. We have a charismatic, strong-willed personality, and we have somebody who's vulnerable, seeking refuge. And what ensues is a really, really bad situation. And again, this is the highlight that a lot of the things that take place aren't necessarily just, you know, SA. You know, it encompasses a lot of areas. As I said, I think it's well worth watching this in its entirety, if you get the chance.
No, because part of it is, number one, they would be going against everyone to speak the truth and leave. And so they doubt themselves. The other piece is that there is a dynamic with an abuser and a victim. And there are ways in which the victim feels special, important, part of a big work. And yes, I did that, but you wouldn't want to destroy God's work, would you? You're a part of God's work. It's going to matter. It's not that they're going to deal with somebody who's abusive. They're going to bring down God's work. And they can't do that. That's wrong. That's not what they want. They want to honor God. They have a chance to honor God in that circle. And the kind of thinking that goes on there gets more and more twisted in order to stay.
For me...
And that's part of the difficulty when we have such a systemic abuse taking place, where even those that are wanting to speak out or come out of that system struggle to do so because of the damaging of God's work, so-called. And again, I think it's important if we can distinguish. Again, I don't know the fullness of what takes place in this ministry, but my instinct is that, you know, when you can have a work of man and have great successes and attribute it to the Spirit and attribute it to God. But also in that work of men, you can have the view of the institution or the system or the individuals itself being bigger than the principle that we're we're supposed to be doing, i.e., you know, holding reverence to individuals, having loyalties that supersede what the scriptures say. I just think there's a lot of space for this to take place. And if this is one example, who knows what's taking place in the UK and worldwide as well, with regards to the fallout of people manipulating and taking advantage of vulnerable people, and not just in a way that gets blown up and exposed in the media and is on the, you know, the news and all of that, like all the stuff that goes under the radar. You know, how many people are sat at home, you know, not in fellowship, disillusioned with what's taking place because of the examples of what we're seeing here. It's heavy. It's really heavy.
On, first of all, the enormous success of Soul Survivor and a feeling of we wouldn't want to stop what the Lord is doing in some way, as if bringing challenge to terrible behaviour might in some way harm the kingdom and impact. So you could see how perhaps people might have thought, you know, there's this great cause and for the greater good, you know, people need to get on with it somehow.
People work to protect the system rather than the sheep. And it's God's, we say, and therefore it has to be protected. So somebody comes forward and we say it's not true. Because if it's true, it's going to hurt God's work, and we don't want to do that. It can't be true. If it were true, we wouldn't be full of people in the pews. And again, because we love and worship, I think, the institution of the church, we think that's the right thing to do.
That's such a massive point. You know, this idea of hurting the system, of hurting the church, you know, as a structure and almost like a business as well. I recently had a conversation with a brother who has recently come more towards the messianic branch of the faith and has spent a lot, you know, a very long time in the church system, as it were. And we were discussing the principle of how, you know, the word can be either watered down or even completely left to the side for fear of, I guess, convicting people to the point where they wouldn't want to go. You know, where essentially you need the bums on seats in order for it to function, because you've got, you know, careers, you've got mortgages, you've got the whole thing is reliant on a financial model for it to succeed, and you don't want to upset the apple cart. So people are able to get away with, you know, on a light side, not teaching the word accurately, and then on the heavier side, getting away with abusive situation. So again, I'm not saying that if you are more reliant on sermons and teachings that are more closer to teaching the word, because I don't think you're exonerated from these things happening. However, I think you're going to be encouraging a congregation and a group of people to really seek out God's truth and that relationship within it, rather than this kind of emotional experience-based faith that is dependent on a leader and a person in a way that's not healthy. Now, I'm reliant on my teachers and my leaders to give me good teaching. I'm not expecting them to spoon feed me in my relationship with God. He's to encourage me in my discipleship to strive for my own connections with the Spirit and to be led in that way. So that doesn't mean to say we completely diminish the responsibilities of leaders in this capacity, not by any stretch, but there needs to be a healthy balance there of somebody who is warm, who is compassionate, who can be funny, who can blend certain elements of humanity. But at the end of the day, there needs to be an approach of righteousness and a message of righteousness in order to sustain healthy relationships. That's just my opinion. because I'm seeing a pattern of where this happens. It's where the meat is lacking, essentially. And again, I appreciate I could be generalizing a lot here as well. You know, this is one example, but, you know, I can only offer my two cents.
People going to the festivals, this is wonderful. Is all these people coming to faith. Nobody wants to tear that down. Nobody wants to hurt the church. Do you even want to hurt Mike? I just want this to stop.
I felt at least my responsibility before God and, you know, as a friend, would be to see whether I could help create a context where it would be safe for people to share their story and come forward and say what had happened.
And I didn't know there was such a thing as the NST. That's probably bad, but I had never heard of it. I didn't know there was such a thing. I would have definitely gone to them earlier had I known.
It's only been recently that we're beginning to see people coming forward about that abuse in churches and Christian organizations and actually being believed.
When people feel heard, when people feel safe, that sets the tone really for challenging issues such as this to be addressed without rushing to conclusions. I'm aware now of the report with over 100 people coming forward. Some of them it was physical, all of them it was psychological and emotional. And it's really interesting, honestly, people who happened to decades ago still haven't got past it.
Those that I've heard from, the damage is trauma, PTSD, horrific spiritual fallout, everything ranging from a total loss of faith and not being able to believe in God anymore. Everything from that to, you know, people who are amazing Christian leaders, but who've really needed therapeutic help, spiritual intervention. There are definitely redemptive stories, but the truth coming out is so critical to this and so helpful for some victims to feel believed and to feel that, you know, someone cares about my story and actually believes that this is true and believes that the damage is real.
It's so, I think this is so hard hitting in the sense that the fallout when these things aren't done correctly and done by this, being led by the Spirit, is the damage can be so, so bad. And you know, the idea of promoting and pushing a ministry's growth and expansion for the sake of doing God's work, when really on the inside of it it's rotten, that fills me with dread, you know. And you know, I'll say this, we're not looking for perfection. You know, there was only one that was perfect. I think there was only one who was able to have followers. I don't feel that. I think the man is so corrupt that for them to have followers in any capacity, I just don't think we can handle it. It's too much power, too much temptation. Only Yeshua could come and lead men in a way that was truly Spirit-led. So when we're in danger of pushing a ministry or an individual over true discipleship, the fallout of this is horrendous, and the standard by which these individuals are being held accountable by is very, very serious. Part of the sentiment that I have with this as well is that we're only as strong as our weakest part in terms of being a body. And people have a heart and a sentiment for revival, for seeing great moves of the Spirit in the UK, in the US, and worldwide. You know, the world needs a savior. The world needs the gospel. The world needs righteousness in a lawless place. I struggle to see how we can expect expansion, growth, development, revival, amazing things to take place if there are instances of this still happening within the body. And again, not just within Christianity, but within Messianic, within all of the branches of the faith. How can God bless something that's been so tarnished? So that's another part of the sentiment that I hold, is like, we all want to see amazing things taking place, but we still need to get the house in order, you know? And I just pray that Yeshua can do this, because we can't do it through our own strength, ultimately. And just to play out on this section, I think this is a great ending.
By little, the church beginning to respond. There is a verse in 2 Chronicles, you know, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear them and I will forgive them and I will heal them. The church at large needs to humble herself.
Yeah. Really strong stuff. And maybe not the happiest subject to be discussing, but I think, again, these are just really important conversations to be had. And I just wonder how many people are out there struggling because of this. Now, I came across a channel that was, directly, indirectly related to this subject, which I didn't realize were linked initially. But I'm always curious about what takes place in the body and within Christianity in general, because just purely because of the sheer volume of folks in there. And this was a channel I came across last month, and it was about an individual who has who was part of the Soul Survivors Church at one point, and is just, you know, take it upon himself to ask hard questions and take a look at what took place in his experience in the church. And again, this is representative of one individual at one church. I'm not saying that this is the rule. I'm sure there are so many churches out there in the UK and in the States and worldwide who do amazing work. This isn't necessarily about that. But I think when these, as I said, when these things are taking place, like, I don't know what we're expecting to come of it in terms of moves and things of that nature. And these things are being brought to attention, are being brought to the light for a good reason. So with that, this is an individual called Sam Housen, somebody who's not part of the church anymore, but I think has got a very, his style of filming and the way in which he's presenting the information about his experiences, it's very stripped back, very honest. And again, I think it just serves a very important warning or lesson in terms of the things that we need to avoid moving forward, both as a ministry ourselves, but potentially as a move of the Lord in the future. Because it's my heart that we don't become corrupted by the same things, you know. If there is a form of expansion, if there is more responsibility given to individuals, you know, there have been examples of fallouts of this within the Messianic communities. However, I believe that we're still on the verge of amazing things being done, who are coming to this notion of the spirit and truth really coming together. And I just think that these can serve as a really good warning for us to how to steward and navigate potential expansion and remaining having our integrity remaining in the word. But yeah, this is Sam House. And again, not all of his views, I don't share all of his views. I don't agree with everything he says and things like that. But I just think he makes some very clear points.
No one's taking the lead with what happened with or what came out about Soul Survivor. No one's taking the lead about how the Church of England continues and the evangelical sort of charismatic church culture seems to perpetuate the problems which I experienced 20 years ago. No one's taking the lead to challenge it. But there are a lot of people that are hurt who all exist within a vacuum. What's great about this format, me sitting in my garage, because I thought the light looked quite cool, was I can talk about it, and I've got a camera that does this stuff. I'm being really lazy with a microphone on top of the camera. I don't have one here. But what's good about this is I can talk about it, but I'm just surprised so few people are, in addition to me. I'm also really surprised why over 13 months, no one has really responded to me or spoken to me or just been honest with me. The closest I get to honesty is an email and then either a follow-up email or even within that email saying, understand why you're doing what you're doing, but I don't feel like I can be part of it. It's really bizarre that a church, an environment that I gave my teens and my 20s to, now in my 40s, is exactly the same, hasn't moved on, and continues to look exactly like a carbon copy of something that's out of date. I've gone past finding it sort of taking it personally, and actually beginning to just see it as being so irrelevant and harmlessly harmful, in that it doesn't, if it was harmful, it would be, there would be something to it which would make it dangerous. And that was always my view of it that was my view of church as a kid, as in my teens, in my 20s. I viewed church as being so dangerous it could change society, it could change communities, it could change countries. But now the danger of it is just that it hurts people inside it. The danger of church is that it harms and abuses the people that believe in it.
I think that's such a strong point. You know, we can often deflect and look at the world and look at the enemy and the evils thereof and put a lot of blame to that, and rightly so, in the right way, in the right context. But at the same time, you know, this idea of people being more hurt in this place of refuge, this place of safety, is wicked. It's wicked and it's evil. And I guess from a spiritual perspective, it's the result of infiltration, whether it be principalities, whether it be the weakness of men, whatever the root of that, whatever that may be, the results are just, as I said before, so serious.
Now I'm outside of church, I see it as harmless. But my memory of it is that it's dangerous. So which is it? Can church be a vehicle that supports the poor, that gives hope to the hopeless, that supports the unsupported? Or is it an environment, a body, that eats itself like a cancer?
Really, really stark warning. And again, this is just a microcosm of an individual's experience. If you are led, it's channel Sam Housen. Again, from a theological point of view, whatever, it's not about completely aligning. It's looking at the fallout of the potential, how we can have a generation of individuals who have experienced this church hurt, so-called, and could be waiting for... could be waiting for genuine fellowship in a safe environment. So, yeah, a tough one again this week. But nonetheless, an important aspect of what's taking place. If this is something that you've experienced yourself or have an opinion on, please let me know. Is this something that we should even be worried about? As I said, is it for those guys over there? Is this something that we need to even care about? I don't know. But for me, I just think it serves as a very stark warning. And personally, it's incredibly convicting where it comes to the point of if you are given a responsibility or a platform, that the maintaining of integrity is vital. How many times does Yeshua talk about hypocrisy? And that's something that's really, really tough. And I've experienced it even just on being in here. It's you know, there's a degree of accountability that my flesh probably doesn't even want to embrace the responsibility of. So can we even have growth and expansion and mass gatherings of people under one banner without corruption, without the abuse of power? Or is there a balance to be struck in the future where there can be great moves of the Most High to unify his people and his body without the wiles of the enemy and the desires of men corrupting that? I don't know. I think I definitely don't have the answers to that one. I have hope. I have an expectation of the Lord doing what he pleases. However, I think it's interesting to see what our role in that is going to be. So as ever, thank you if you stuck all the way to the end. I appreciate that. Get involved in the comments, like, subscribe, do all the stuff. Much appreciated. Once again, from our house to yours, this has been the Upper Room After Hours. We love you. Shalom. Take care. God bless.